The News and Public Affairs Department at KWED brings to you the Saturday Topic, a weekly discussion of current events. Good morning. I'm Darren Dunn.
Here on the Saturday Topic program, we continue our health and wellness series with the folks over at Guadalupe Regional Medical Center. Today we have a very interesting topic to cover. We're going to talk about the life care services that are available there now at GRMC. Maybe you may know it by some of the past names. We'll get to that in a minute. But let me first introduce to you Dr. Charles Nolan. He is the Medical Director of Life Care Services there at GRMC. Tom Jones is Executive Director of Life Care Services. And Liliana De La Torre is the Director of Advanced Care Planning. Folks, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
All right, Dr. Nolan, you drew the short straw, so we're going to let you start sort of get the ball rolling. For people who are not familiar with what we are talking about when we say life care services, what does that mean?
Well, we're a team of an interdisciplinary team of professionals, a physician. Tom and Liliana are both professional chaplains, but serving in slightly different capacity. Tom is our director of life care services and sort of keeps us all running in the right direction. Liliana is our director of advanced care planning, and we're a multifaceted program. Our charge is to help patients and families who are dealing with serious illness to have support and to deal with their illness in the best way possible. And the centerpiece of our program, and the one that we want to focus on discussing today, is what we call advanced care planning. Many people know something about this. It's the whole subject of advanced directives that is so popular a topic of discussion in our country today. And we have developed a program that we think is better than the standard program. Most people do advanced care planning in conjunction with setting up their estate, setting up their will for their estate, and so forth, and their finances. And advanced care planning is done as a part of that, which is well-intentioned, but has many shortcomings that make it less useful than most people think. In fact, we go so far as to say that advanced directives don't work when they're done in the fashion that most people do them. And we think that we've come up with a better way for not just patients or people with chronic illness, but for all adults to manage their advanced directives so that they're meaningful and actually impact the care that they receive when they develop a serious illness.
Calling this life care services now, this is sort of the kind of topic we used to use the word palliative, the words palliative care. Can you explain why the distinction?
Yes. Well, there's some negative connotations about the other services that are associated with palliative care. One is that if people know anything about palliative care, they often equate it with hospice. And hospice is a part of palliative care, but only a small part. Where people are at the end of their life and disease-directed therapy is no longer working, and patients and their families have decided that they're going to focus on comfort care and enjoying the things that bring meaning to their life in the time they have remaining. How palliative care differs from that is palliative care is designed to run concurrent with active disease-directed therapies. For instance, someone with an advanced cancer that's getting active treatment, someone with advanced heart failure that's getting active treatment, someone with advanced chronic lung disease, they're getting active treatment, but they also need the support from this interdisciplinary team to help define their goals of care and the types of care that they would want when some serious complication arises from their illness.
Before we dig down too much further into this topic, I wanted to give Liliana and Tom a chance to sort of talk about what it is you do and what the role that you play within all of this. Liliana, explain to me your role.
Yes, my role is as Director of Advanced Care Planning. It's to recruit,
and to train advanced care planning facilitators. Means that the facilitator is the person that is trained and certified through our program, that they have the ability to have this very important conversations with patients. I want to make the clarification is that the facilitator meet not only with sick people, because as the doctor just said, advanced care planning is for all adults. So everybody that is an adult should have a plan, and that's what the facilitator will do.
Tom, your role.
Yeah, my role is just to keep the team, as Dr. Nolan said, going in the same direction. But to put together, we've hired a social worker that is very valuable with our team. We are reaching out to really put things into place to respect people's choices. The problem is, Darren, is that a lot of people assume that hospitals speak to each other, or that lawyers convey those decisions made in their office about advanced directives to the hospitals or healthcare workers. But that's not true. Those things really remain invisible. If someone does an advanced directive, whether it be a living will or medical power of attorney, in a lawyer's office, they often will assume that, well, everybody knows that. And that's not the case. We have a lot of folks that we see that wonder why certain treatments were offered when they had very clearly expressed they didn't want that. So we've really developed a way of really respecting their choices and honoring that on an ongoing basis.
You know, the various hospitals and medical providers may not know their cases where families don't even know some of those directives that have been assigned by that individual.
That's absolutely true. And we run into this virtually every day that a crisis happens with a patient that has a chronic illness and things are done in haste at the hospital, as they have to be, because decisions have to be made in short order if someone has a medical crisis. And often those living wills or other advanced directive documents that were created sometimes decades ago are locked in a safe somewhere. No one knows what they say. And more importantly, the family members, usually who have been designated as medical power of attorney or healthcare agent, don't even really know what those documents say. The biggest shortcoming of the living will structure that we have in Texas and in every state in the country is that they're all structured pretty much the same. And they say something to the effect that if I'm terminal, or I'm in the last 6 months of my life, that I don't want heroic measures, that I'd rather, you know, focus on comfort care and so forth. And the trouble with that is that's not how medical care really works. You see on TV, you know, people are given, you know, 5 months and 2 hours to live. But in reality, even someone with a life-limiting illness, it's hard to say with precision how long they'll live. And we have treatments that extend life in a major way, even when people have a known so-called terminal illness. What we've come up with is a slightly, well, dramatically different, really, program that we have developed a document to that we think is an ideal vehicle for documenting the results of the kinds of conversation that Liliana and her volunteers or our life care team have with patients and their families. And that is specifically things that they would want as knowing the illness that they have, and we're focusing now on people that have chronic illness. We'll talk, I hope, have time to talk about healthy people. But for people with a known chronic illness or life-limiting illness, we can talk about what they would want in specific instances, knowing what path their disease could take. For instance, someone that has advanced cancer and is getting chemotherapy might come in with a complication during the time that their blood counts are low from the chemotherapy and get a pneumonia or something like that, or get what we call sepsis, where their blood pressure goes low because they have a serious infection. And that person might want to try advanced therapies, including going to the intensive care unit and getting all that's available in the intensive care unit, like help with breathing, being on a so-called breathing machine, or being on medicines to raise the blood pressure, or occasionally even being on dialysis if they develop acute kidney injury as a result of their serious illness. But what people are fearful of is that once those therapies are implemented, that they can't be stopped. They're fearful of remaining on breathing equipment or in the ICU when there's no hope of meaningful recovery or returning to what brought value to their life before. And so the breakthrough that we've had is in these discussions to talk about goal-defined, time-limited trials, meaning I'm willing to try this. And, you know, it usually within a few days of intensive care treatment, it's pretty obvious if a person's going to recover or if they're going to, you know, not recover. And most patients are willing to say, yes, I'd be willing to do that, but I want to authorize my agent, since I won't be able to speak if I'm that sick, I won't be able to speak for myself, would authorize my agent to work with the doctors, doing what we call shared decision making, to say, these were the goals and values and beliefs that my loved one verbalized, and based on what you've told me, we're not going to reach those. So it's time to stop those therapies. So rather than being an on-off switch, like most living wills are, meaning if I'm terminal, I don't want anything, we can tailor this to the needs of the patient. Most of the time when these discussions are had in the hospital, when someone's seriously ill, it all focuses on whether they want to have cardiopulmonary resuscitation or CPR. We go far beyond that. In fact, a person could say, you know, I realize I have a terminal illness, and if my heart stops, the odds of being successfully resuscitated and returning to my former life are low, so I wouldn't want that. I'd want to be allowed a natural death if my heart were to stop in the setting of this chronic illness. But if I come to the hospital with breathing difficulty or a serious infection, I would want treatment and see if I'm going to get better and able to return to where I was and continue my disease-directed therapy. So it's totally different than this on-off switch. And based on this structured conversation that Tom and Liliana and I and our volunteer facilitators have with patients and their families, we look at their goals and their values and beliefs and see how those impact the decisions that they would make, knowing that they may face a health crisis in the coming months or years.
I mean, what I'm hearing is a much more nuanced approach to this kind of care.
Absolutely.
It's all about respecting patients' choices.
Letting them know they have choices.
And letting them know they have choices. Oftentimes that's not, oftentimes that's not really conveyed, that there are options.
Well, that's what I like most about this is it's empowering patients. And you hear a lot of concern in the lay press and people talking about these things when they don't really know the facts, that this is a way to limit care, to deprive people of things, to take away their choices. And in fact, you're really empowering them because a lot of people will say they don't want things just because they don't want to be a burden on the family or they're fearful of it. And when we have these frank discussions, they can really lay out exactly what they want with regard to their health care. We have the experience all the time that we'll get a consult, we go to meet with a patient and their family, we begin to discuss the necessity of having this discussion, and people say, well, I've already taken care of that. You know, I did this with my lawyer, and I don't need to talk about it. It's all done. And almost to a person, when we finish our conversation, they say, I understand why this was so important. It's so much better than what I did before. It's a comfort to the patient and a comfort to their family. We call it really a gift to the family because you're empowering them. When a crisis happens, they're no longer deciding for the patient, deciding life and death in essence. All they're doing is being a mouthpiece or a spokesperson for their loved one that can't speak for themselves and making their wishes known.
And our team has discovered that DNR does not have one definition. But DNR has many definitions. to a nursing home, it means one thing. To the hospital physician, it means another. To the community, it means something totally different. So what we've done is we've really tried to define what does that mean. And we have people that say, I'm supposed to be a DNR. We have the conversation. They don't really want to be a DNR. They want to have those time-limited trials of treatments.
There's one other thing that we should mention in the context of discussions about choices for serious illness, and that is the whole issue of artificial nutrition and hydration, which gets on the news all the time. And those are the kind of circumstances where a serious illness or accident injury happens. A patient gets life-sustaining treatment that saves their life, and then they embark on this long course of rehabilitation of getting better. For instance, after head trauma or head injury. It's not known if you're going to wind up being someone fortunate like Representative Gabby Giffords, that's a well-known political figure who had a serious traumatic injury to the brain from a gunshot wound and survived despite all odds with intensive rehab therapy that involved feeding tubes. But just as many people have that kind of serious injury from trauma to the brain or a stroke or whatever, and you don't know if they're going to recover, if they're going to be a miracle like Representative Giffords, or if they're going to be someone who ends up in a nursing home, you know, staring at the ceiling, unable to communicate, literally being kept alive by a feeding tube. And so what we do is discuss these things in advance and use the same sort of goal-defined, time-limited trial framework to discuss using artificial nutrition and hydration with feeding tubes. And most people, when confronted with that, say, well, if I have a serious illness or injury, and I'm getting better, and I can't swallow, I would be helped by a feeding tube, but I want to set limits. In other words, as long as it's helping me, I want to continue. But, and we've built in what we call an escape clause. We don't call it that on the form, but it is an escape clause that says that I, the patient, or if I can't speak for myself, my designated medical powers of attorney, may decide to stop this treatment if my condition changes such that the burdens of treatment outweigh the benefits and it's no longer in my best interest. So this is how you avoid becoming, you know, one of these people you hear about that has lost all their brain function, but they're being kept alive by a feeding tube. Because now the person is saying in advance, I would accept this kind of therapy, but I want to set limits to it. And so you're really empowering the patient to decide in advance. This is particularly important with someone with an advancing neurodegenerative disease or something like dementia, mm-hmm. Alzheimer's or other types of dementia, where the natural history of that disease is that they're going to get to the point where they can't swallow solid foods initially, or they eventually can't maintain adequate nutrition. Even with a pureed diet. And then a decision inevitably has to be made about should a feeding tube be put in. And most of the time with that kind of illness, dementia, putting in a feeding tube, even though it makes sense that it would be helpful, it tends not to be helpful. So the ideal thing is to identify patients that have these illnesses early on when they can still speak for themselves, have this difficult but important discussion that their family hears and know what their wishes are in advance and document those so that when it happens, now it's they're sort of a blueprint for what the patient wants. And it's a comfort to the family to have that.
We're talking about life care services that are available at Guadalupe Regional Medical Center. Here in Seguin, our guests this morning, Dr. Charles Nolan, Liliana Della Torre, and Tom Jones. We sort of lay this out for folks and describe those services. How do we go from just making them more aware that these services exist to actually putting some of this into action? How do people get started in trying to lay the foundation for what will become their advanced care plan?
I think Liliana can address that, but let me just say there are two basic components to this that Liliana can lay out in detail. One we call first steps. and that's for every healthy adult. And it basically consists of asking the person to pick the individuals they would want to represent them if some serious illness or injury happened and they couldn't speak for themselves, medical power of attorney, and to say to themselves, what kind of treatment would I want if I had a serious injury and I'm already on life support? I get in an accident in I-10 and I'm at one of the major trauma centers and life support's already been implemented. And the doctors come to my family and say, your loved one's never going to recover from this. What would you want? That's first steps. And then advanced steps is what we just have been discussing, which is I now have a known chronic illness, and what would I want knowing the type of illness that I have and the kinds of things that can happen as complications of that illness. So, Liliana, do you want to talk about how we implement the first steps and the advanced steps? How does a person who's interested in this get involved in our program?
If somebody is interested, they can call us, and then we can contact the doctor and, you know, get the referral so we can actually see the whole team. Sometimes the patient don't need that because many times are healthy adults, so we can do advanced care planning as first steps. The way to do it is they can contact us if they live in Seguin and surrender areas to 830-401-7704. Another thing is that when we get a lot of people that are interested either for first steps, healthy adults, or advanced steps, we need more people to be able to help us to do this. We need more facilitators. Mm. And that's very important. And then we have the question, who can be advanced care planning facilitator? I think that the most important thing is that somebody that cares, somebody that is willing to learn. I have some facilitators that they are retirees, people that want to use their time and serve. So we give them the training to be able, this is already planned. So we don't need to figure out how I'm going to do these conversations. For me as a chaplain, that I don't necessarily talk about healthy issues with people, it was just a challenge to think about that. But then the program is so easy that anybody that can learn it if you have the time. So still you can call 830-401-7704. I'm planning on doing a class probably in 6 weeks so you can be trained and be able to do this wonderful service. And we have a great team with Tom, our social worker, and Dr. Nolan. So I think that it's a very rewarding program and something good for anybody that is willing to, you know, to spend their time helping others.
So you don't need to be a healthcare professional in order to be trained as a facilitator.
Yes, many people think, doctor, that, oh, you have to be a nurse or you have to be. No, many of our volunteers are just people that care. And if you have the time.
And then you teach them a scripted conversation.
Yeah, the conversation is already scripted, so it's easy to learn because you follow a script. So you don't need to be thinking about how you're going to do it and which way I'm going to start to talking to people. Our program, we always said it's all about the conversation. But it's a conversation among families, you know, that they realize what is important to my father, what is important to my family member. So many times we end up hearing things like, I never heard my mother saying all this. So it's not easy many times for families to come up, you know, on Thanksgiving, let's talk about what I want if, you know, I get to the circumstances. But with a facilitator that is trained, it's better, it's easier to do this.
Yeah, our motto is, one of our many mottos is that we like to have these conversations across the kitchen table rather than across the bed in the ICU.
If folks are in need of these services, well, I think it's two things. One, I think we've established the critical need for people who have chronic conditions. They need to make sure that they are able to talk about how they want that care to proceed if things worsen. But can you speak directly to those people who are listening this morning who are like, I'm perfectly fine. I'm young or active, and I, you know, this is just something that can wait.
Right. Well, the trouble is sometimes it can't wait, and you don't know when you're going to suddenly become that person who was healthy one moment and on technology keeping you alive the next moment. I like to think about it this way, is we all have auto insurance. And we have that little insurance card up in the visor of our car, but we don't drive around thinking about, oh, my God, I'm going to have an accident, I'm going to have an accident. But the minute you get in your accident, you reach up there and grab it. And in essence, First Steps Advanced Care Planning is the same thing.
Yes.
You hope that you're never going to have to avail yourself to that kind of real situation. But if you do, you have a plan in place where you know who's going to speak for you, and that person knows your basic goals and values and beliefs and what you wouldn't want. I mean, one of the first people that we took care of was a man in his 60s who was a security guard.
I was hoping you'd
going
share that.
From place to place at night, you know, one of these that you see traveling around that goes from restaurant to restaurant to make sure there's no suspicious activity in the wee hours of the morning. And he ran across a small restaurant in San Antonio that he was responsible for that was being burglarized. And he got out and confronted the four people, and they severely beat him, ran him over with their car. And he wound up at Fort Sam. They saved his life. They put him on a breathing machine and a feeding tube and sent him to rehab, hopeful that he would be like Gabby Giffords and eventually recover. Unfortunately, he didn't. And we met him 4 years after the fact in one of our local nursing homes, awake and alert, but unable to communicate, bedridden, literally being kept alive by a tube. And he had never really told his loved ones what his choices would be. We had to sort of surmise, based on the things that were of value to him, you know, what he would want. And it was a tragic situation. You know, if you had a conversation with him, you'd see a tear roll down his cheek, so you knew that he was in there. But his life consisted literally of staring at the ceiling and nothing more for 4 years. And doing First Steps Advanced Care Planning and putting a plan in place is how you keep yourself from being that person. It's how you keep yourself from being someone like Terry Schiavo, that very high-profile case where the woman had a cardiac arrest and had what we call a persistent vegetative state, where the basic functions of your brain, breathing, are intact, but your higher cortical thinking is gone. And she was being kept alive by a feeding tube, and no one knew what her wishes were. And it, of course, got national headlines. So this is the way that you prevent yourself from being that. Now, the majority of the population are not going to wind up with that, of course, but you don't know if you're going to be one of those people.
Yeah, it would be good if you ask yourself the question to yourself, you know, what happened if I end up being in that condition? Who will be the person will speak for me? And then some people do have an idea, oh, my daughter or somebody. But that person really knows your values, your belief, what is important to you, what the type of treatments you will want or not. Because many people tell me, yes, my husband will be or whoever. But that doesn't mean that the conversation had happened, that they actually understand what is important to this person. Right. Even among couples, you know, and that happened to myself, you know. Not necessarily your family will know unless you have the conversation and they understand what you will want if you end up being in that situation.
And I think it's also very important when we talk about healthy individuals. Our form does not allow one to choose to be DNR. And that's a huge step.
For First Steps, you're
for
talking
first steps. Steps. Mm-hmm. For First Steps. It doesn't allow one to choose to be DNR. If I'm in my condition right now, I don't have any health conditions that I'm concerned about or that the doctors are concerned about. If I go and fill a standard Texas living will out, that's a very difficult proposition for me. To say, in a terminal condition, I want to, because I don't know what that looks like. But we have designed it so that DNR is not a choice. You can't choose to be DNR, but you can put limitations on some of the treatment choices. And I think that's really the point that's very, very important.
If you're a healthy person who has a sudden life-threatening illness or injury.
Yeah, that's right. And that's the majority of people. You sure. know, we're healthy adults right. walking around thinking that nothing is going to ever happen to us because we, you know, our culture is not designed that way. But when you end up thinking, what if I'm one of those people? Then you have to have a plan. If you don't need to use it, it's fine. But it's always good to have a plan.
That plan, it speaks for your own desires, but it also has to alleviate some of that burden that would be on your family.
Oh, absolutely.
Yes.
This, it's a gift to your family to do this. Our program is modeled after a very well-established program in La Crosse, Wisconsin at Gunderson Lutheran Medical Center called Respecting Choices. And they have a first steps program like what we're describing. And the community around La Crosse is about 75,000 people. And 90% of all adults have had the basic first step conversation. Our dream here at Guadalupe Regional is that we could come to accomplish the same thing for the people that we serve in Guadalupe County and surrounding counties, where everyone's knowledgeable about first steps, who they want to represent them, and what they would want if they had a serious brain injury and the doctors told their family, we don't expect your loved one to recover to the point that they knew who they were, where they were, or who they were with. That's basic first steps. And you do it. You don't think about it after that. It's there like an insurance policy waiting to be referred to if the unexpected suddenly happens.
Advanced steps, there's a referral required to do the advanced steps? Yes.
Actually,
or no?
Actually, for advanced steps or advanced care planning in specific, both first steps and advanced steps, a person can call Liliana's office, have it established with a facilitator team to be able to accomplish that. If someone decides, you know, I've got a serious illness and I would like to see Dr. Nolan, they need to speak to their primary care physician. And then that primary care physician can make a referral to Dr. Nolan.
Or if patients self-refer, we have all of our primary care physicians in the Seguin area know about this program and fully support it. And we can call and say, you know, one of your patients has self-referred and wants to do advanced care planning. Is it okay? So that, and I forgot to mention one important thing,
sure.
very important thing, which is when, for advanced steps, when we finish this discussion and create that document that we call the Advanced Steps Directive to Physicians, it only becomes active when the primary care physician looks at it, reviews it, and says, yes, I know this patient well, the things that they've chosen are appropriate to their illness, and these choices should be in effect beginning immediately, and the physician signs it. And so we're making the primary care physician part of the process.
I know that there are people who are thoughtful about these kind of things, and they think that they've taken care of them through a living will or some other document. And you've talked about how inadequate that can be. But when that document exists and maybe they come to you, do those documents ever compete?
Well, we think that what we have refines the living will that they may already have. And the way we've written it, you know, the legal jargon that's in the form says that this document that I'm creating supersedes the living will that was created before because it's more specific. Instead of just saying, if I'm terminal, I don't want advanced care, this more nuanced document is going to say, if these things happen, this is how I want to approach that.
But Darren, if somebody wants to have their documents evaluated by our team to see if there's something more that should be included, mm-hmm. there again, they can just call Liliana and set up a time for those to be evaluated.
All right, we're going to run out of time, so I wanted to make sure, Liliana, can you give them that number again
yes.
and let them know how they can contact you?
Sure. The number is 830-401-7704. So you can leave a message. You can also say any particular question that you have. So if I don't have the answer, I have time to figure it out and consult the other part of the team. So we have a whole team, but not necessarily everybody meets with the whole team. Maybe some people just need to meet with the facilitator. Some other people may have questions about their insurance and things like that. That's why we have a social worker. So we are a multidisciplinary team.
All right. If someone's interested in becoming a facilitator, that same number?
Yes, they can use the same number. Yes, we're planning on doing the training in a few weeks. So even if you just have the question, and we can tell you how you can become a facilitator.
This is very, very important stuff. I'm glad and proud of the work that you guys are doing here at GRMC. Life care services offered at Guadalupe Regional Medical Center. Take advantage of it. Talk to those folks. Reach out to Liliana and her crew. If you need to see Dr. Nolan, they're there. And Tom, of course. And I tell you, I hope folks are listening this morning and will heed some of this advice. You can give them a call over there at GRMC. I want to say thank you to Tom Jones, Liliana De La Torres, and Dr. Charles Nolan for coming in this morning.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for the opportunity.
You bet. Make sure you join us next week on the Saturday Topic. Until then, I'm Darren Dunn. Be well.